on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Tuesday, January 13th, 2026 edition of Invest Talk, and we're well into the second full trading week, of the new year. And there's a lot of headlines, a lot going on with markets, a lot of cross currents, and a rotation that's happening in markets, which we'll dig into here in a little bit. And we are about to embark on earnings season. Actually, it kicked off today with some bank earnings, so we'll dig into that a little bit. And most importantly, we will be answering your finance and investment questions. We will bring you data and perspective so that you can understand market dynamics and how they might affect your portfolio. So that's what this hour is designed to do, is help you become a better investor. That's our mission every day on Invest Talk. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the topics we will discuss throughout this hour. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now.
Hi, Luke and Justin. I was calling to get your take on a stock that I've been looking at here for about a month now called Bright Horizon. The ticker is BFAM. The company provides early education and childcare services, and I was thinking that with more companies mandating return to office on a greater scale, that this could be an industry that might see an uptick here going into 2026. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on it, and if you think it's a good buy, at what point or what price it might be a good buy. Thank you.
Looking at BFAM is the symbol, and I certainly understand your thesis, and that's certainly true. More and more companies are pushing for people to come back to work. And if you look at earnings expectations, they are expected to continue to rise. 30% growth last year and then another 12% increase this year. Now, it is trading at a little bit of a premium, about 20 times forward-looking earnings. So let's call that market multiple going forward. But those estimates for next year are coming down. And the chart is also coming down. It's about 25% from its 52-week high, peaked out last summer. And it's been in a downtrend ever since. And it's consolidating negatively. And this is a great lesson for all of you out there. And his thesis is around demand. And demand is certainly important. But supply is also important as well. And there isn't just one driver of demand. And the demand that you want should be durable, not short term. And what he's speaking to is a short term shift in demand. But I would argue that the long term shift in lower demand, which is low birth rates in the United States, is the bigger problem. So net-net, I don't really see an attractiveness here from a demand perspective. Then on the supply side, what do you need for childcare? Well, you need workers. The AI can't take care of your child. You need actual human beings that are there caring for, teaching your children. And more people are retiring. Our workforce is shrinking, both because of the demographic situation as well as the immigration situation. And so you're getting labor cost inflation. It's down from what it was, but it's still relatively elevated. So there's cost pressures on that side as well. So when I look at the chart, being in a downtrend, and I think about the supply-demand dynamics, I just don't see this as very attractive. Return equity is about 14%, which is pretty good, but its return on invested capital is 6%, which is frankly fairly low. Its free cash flow is about $232 million, which is okay, and it's kind of been flat for the past couple of years, but their market cap is, or their enterprise value is $7 billion. So your free cash flow yield isn't that great either. Decent balance sheet, that's okay. But I just don't see this as a clear-cut buy. I think there's much better opportunities for your money where I would be allocating your capital, and I don't see Bright Horizons Family Solutions as a great choice. Thanks for the call. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and our main focus point is about emerging markets. Had a great 2025, but is it still a value play as we enter 2026? We'll dig into the contrarian value play for this year, potentially driven by a weaker dollar. So we'll look at that. We also have questions in regards to places to move to save for retirement, as well as Leggett and Platten Corporation, L-E-G is the symbol. And of course, we have questions that came in via the comments section over on the InvestTalk YouTube channel as well. And most importantly, will be your live call. So I encourage you to call me right now at 888-99-CHART. We're going to head to a quick break. But please remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk voice bank. And if you're listening via the live stream or on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, you can call me live now. Once again, it's 888-99-CHART. Now up next, I will comment on today's market activity.
The prosperous future you envision for yourself and your family will not happen without strategic planning and definitive action.
Let's go to Brian in San Mateo looking at Roku.
And I wanted your take on the technical picture.
For the unprepared investor, market volatility around the world demonstrates risk, but opportunities wait for no one. And now may be the best time in years to invest wisely, to invest strategically.
What I would do is keep saving and look for other opportunities.
But how can you decide what sectors to avoid, which stocks to buy, and what might be the best price point?
I'm new to investing, and my friend Wesley recommended your podcast a year ago.
The next decisive step on your path to financial freedom begins with a Spotify search for InvestTalk. Listen live or download the free podcast.
Millions of downloads have proved there's value in every InvestTalk podcast. Call anytime, 24/7, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go take a look at the market today. It was a negative day overall, mainly in the large cap space. You had the S&P down about 19 basis points, NASDAQ down about 10 basis points, the Dow down 80 basis points. You did eke out a gain in things like small caps. So overall, it really wasn't a terrible day. But you did have some rough days from some of the bigger names, especially the finance space. You had the JP Morgan come out with earnings that were a bit disappointing, and a few other banks. And overall, there was a lot of red in the finance sector. You also had some of the Mag 7 names were struggling. Amazon and Microsoft down over 1% on the day. Tesla lost a little bit. Nvidia and Apple up slightly. Google up 1.25% or so. So kind of a mixed bag, but overall kind of negative with that really red day for Meta and Amazon. And you did have some strength out of the industrial space. Energy and oil prices continue to come back up after the sell-off post the invasion of Venezuela. So consumer non-durables, consumer staples, those did fairly well. Health was down, actually. So healthcare, that also was kind of the weak point on the day overall. So that was the market day, kind of a mixed bag. We do have what is expected to be the judging of, or the Supreme Court coming out and saying whether the Trump tariffs are actually legal or not. And the poly market odds are very high that they will say they are not. Now, does that mean this is the end of the tariff regime? Probably not. They'll probably go to some sort of sectoral tariffs and kind of work their way around these issues. But most likely It'll cause some headline movement. I don't think it's going to be a major market mover over multiple days. I think that's going to be more around earnings, but certainly something to watch out for tomorrow and as we close the week. The dollar was up 0.3% on the day. Gold ended off 0.3%. Silver settled up 1.5%. Bitcoin up 3.1% on the day. And WTI crude up 2.8% on the latest Iran headlines, back above $60 per barrel. That's what I kind of said when there was the invasion of Venezuela, and President Trump was thinking, hey, that's going to give us new supply coming on market. And, you know, if you understand the reality of the situation, is it's very unlikely that that was going to produce new supply on markets in the short term. Now, over the long term, maybe. But obviously, you add on what happened with Exxon and Chevron, and we knew that that wasn't going to be a place they're going to sink a lot of capital in the short term. And obviously, as the riots and the problems in Iran are being inflamed, we're talking about invading Iran, which talked about we're probably next. I said that a week ago, and here we are, probably in the doorstep of another action there. And you're likely to see oil go up in reaction to that. You did have the CPI increase 0.2% month over month. Expectations were 0.3, so a bit better than expected. Headline came in at 0.3 month over month, which was in line with expectations. Annualized, you have core at 2.6 and you have headline at 2.7, which was pretty much in line with consensus. You also had, like I said, JP Morgan Q4 earnings beat, though revenues missed. So overall, the market didn't really like that. Management sees ongoing consumer resilience, healthy businesses, stabilizing labor market. So they don't see a lot of problems with the overall economy. And obviously, they're the largest bank, so they see a lot of what happens with businesses. So that was the market today, kind of a mixed bag. And we're heading to a lot of really headline news with the SCOTUS ruling, as well as the earnings season kicking off in high gear, especially as we head into next week. So that was the market today for January 13th, 2026. Now let's answer a YouTube comment question. SSJ Baller says, hi, Justin. Want to get your take on CLS and MU. Do you have an entry price? Thank you. Love the weekend videos. All right, let's take a look at CLS and Micron. So CLS is Celestica. This is a Canadian contract manufacturer of electronic products for healthcare, industrial, aerospace, defense, etc. And it is growing considerably, very high multiple. And this is one of those momentum plays. Now, understand it's very high risk. It's growing into this multiple based on forward-looking earnings. You're talking about a mid-30s multiple, which is not terrible considering the growth. So I don't hate the valuation, but the growth does have to be maintained. If it doesn't, it starts to slow into the mid-teens, for example, from kind of the mid to high 20s right now on revenue. You know, that's going to cause multiple contraction and the stock will sink. So understand that risk. So this is 100% a momentum play. And if you like the business, go for it. Now, Micron is similar. And, you know, they're in the memory business. And obviously with AI, it's really easy to create new data. You just type in a query. I do this all the time. I use Gemini all the time, deep research, and, you know, create some incredible reports in just a handful of minutes and makes it really easy. And so you just need more and more memory to make this happen and to store these queries and the output of the queries, at least. So there's some insatiable demand for memory, but history says that this is same thing. Strong growth, it's growing into that, and as long as the growth maintains, it will continue to go up. But if these Mag7 names, for example, the hyperscalers pull back, which I do think at some point this year, they start to question this CapEx spend, and they start to pull back to tens of billions instead of hundreds of billions of dollars in CapEx spend, that's going to hurt names like Micron and probably even CLS. So all you're doing here, it is 100% a momentum play. It's a theme I like, but understand it is very high risk. And what is the entry point? It's now, because it's a momentum play and the trend is your friend until it ends. So that's kind of where we're at with both of these names. Thank you for the comment and for checking out our YouTube channel. Now we're going to take a quick break, and on the other side, Chris from Maine is on the InvestTalk live line asking about Dollar General. So hang on.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
It's a new year. 2026 is here, and so is Justin Klein. He's taking your finance and investment questions anytime. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk to Chris in Maine, looking at Dollar General. Do you own it or looking to buy it?
Yeah, hey, Justin. Thanks for taking my call, as always. Dollar General, I'm looking to buy it. And it's actually funny. I just heard you talking about the trends, your friend, at the vet last bit of Micron there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this has kind of seemed like it hit a bottom and has really been rallying as of lately. Mm-hmm. So I was curious if you think this still has some room to run based on fundamentals or kind of getting ahead of itself here.
Yeah, looking at Dollar General, they operate over 20,000 stores in 48 states. They plan to open about 575 more stores in fiscal 2025. So they're moving. They're growing. Revenue growth last quarter was 5%. It's been consistently 5% for the past, what's that, six quarters or so. Earnings for this year expected to be up $6.47, then $7.12 next year. It's $151 stock. So, you know, low 20s forward-looking earning multiple. And like you said, the trend is certainly up. Relative strength is 93. It's kind of right at it's at its 52-week high right now. And this is interesting because we actually were looking at this name recently along with its probably biggest competitor, which would be Dollar Tree. We ended up going with Dollar Tree. We liked it a bit better. Now, it was kind of splitting hairs. It was hard to decide, to be honest with you. We ended up going with Dollar Tree because they spun off a business that had low margins and they sold it to private equity. So we kind of liked that. We thought margins were going to expand. So, you know, we're probably a slightly bigger fan of Dollar Tree, but I like both and both have their merits. So this is an area where obviously consumers are becoming a little more cash strapped. And what happens when they are cash strapped? Well, they spend a little bit less and they trade down to cheaper stores like a Dollar Tree, like a Dollar General, etc. And we like those trends. And so we like both. Once again, like Dollar Tree slightly more, but both would be fine choices.
Great. Thank you for your time. I appreciate you.
No problem. Thanks for the call. Let's keep things moving and tackle another listener question from 888-99-CHART.
Hey, InvestTalk. This is Kevin calling from Southern California. Today, I have kind of a strange retirement question. It's theoretical. If you had like a $10 million IRA and you wanted to do a full account Roth conversion, are there any states where it would be worth moving to for a year and making that your primary residence to do this full Roth conversion where you save enough on taxes, state taxes, where this might be worth it? Just always have retirement thoughts on my mind. I appreciate your input. Thank you.
Great question. And the simple answer is, yeah, there are many states. I believe there's seven or eight states that are completely tax-free that you have to establish residency. If you're coming from California, they scrutinize you pretty good to make sure that you really are moving. You're not kind of skirting the rules. Now, if you're a lower income earner, they're probably not going to chase you. But if you're a high income earner, they probably will. And so you have to be careful with that. Also, remember, if you convert your entire account, that's going to hit your adjusted gross income on the federal level, no matter where you live. And so most likely, and for most people, very few people, especially if they have a large IRA, they're not going to do a conversion all in 1 year. Remember, you don't have to do that. It's not like you have to convert every dollar from an IRA to a Roth if you're going to do a Roth conversion. You can just do a little bit each year. And frankly, for the vast majority of people, there's a certain amount that keeps them below the next tax bracket for them to do that conversion each year. And slowly over time, they convert most, if not all, of their IRA to a Roth. And I think that's a goal everybody should have. And creating a plan is very important, whether you do that, whether you talk to an advisor like me to help with that, whatever it is, everyone should have an idea of when they're going to convert their IRA to a Roth IRA or 401k to a Roth IRA, et cetera. So I like what you're thinking of, but this is more, this would have to be more of a longer term plan. Hey, I'm going to move to Nevada, state tax free. I'm going to live there for 5 years. I'm going to break it up over 5 years, and I'm going to lock in a lower tax rate, both on a state level and a federal level, et cetera. And then maybe you can move on from there. But make sure that you consult with a licensed tax attorney or CPA before you do something like this. And make sure you build a bigger picture plan. So many people are myopic and they just focus on one particular aspect of financial planning without looking at the big picture. For us, our clients, we use Orion. There are a lot of different options out there, from eMoney to, you know, other planning softwares. I think everybody should run through that to understand from a tax perspective, a strategy perspective, model out the cash flows, both income and expenses, and assets and liabilities. All of this should be modeled out, not just a snapshot of today, but going out into the future decades. And that is when you can make informed decisions about when you should do things like Roth conversions. So hopefully that gave you some perspective on how to think. And once again, make sure you aren't myopic and just saying, I want to focus on just Roth conversions. No, it's part of the bigger picture. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll dig into this story. CPI Day, the sticky 3% problem. Tuesday's inflation report is out, and we will discuss why the last mile of the inflation fight is proving impossible for the Fed to win without breaking the labor market. That story is tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein, and we're ready to take your calls now on 888-99-CHART.
This year, give a gift that goes far beyond the moment. An Invest 529 account. Whether it's a child, grandchild, or someone just starting out, you're helping them save for education that could open doors for a lifetime. Invest 529 is a tax-advantaged way to save for college, trade school, or even apprenticeship programs. It's flexible, easy to start, and you can contribute any amount, big or small. You can even invite your friends and family to join in, making it a meaningful group gift. Each contribution helps build a brighter future, one deposit at a time. And because the money can grow tax-free, it's a gift that really builds value over time. So instead of giving something that gets used up or set aside, give the gift that can change a life. Start an Invest 529 account today. Go to invest529.com to get started. I've got something you need to check out. Now there's ClickUp. If your day starts with 10, 15, 25, or even 40 open tabs and ends with decision fatigue, because instead of doing your work, you're managing how to manage it. Spreadsheets here, docs there, Slack convos everywhere. It was chaos. But now there's ClickUp. It brings together projects, docs, conversations, everything in one workspace. ClickUp doesn't just support your workflow, it upgrades it with automation, AI, and customization. It's already trusted by over 4 million teams worldwide, and it helps them finish projects 30% faster. Try ClickUp for free and get 15% off all AI add-ons just for signing up at clickup.com/invest. That's CLICKUP.com/invest. Close your tabs and open ClickUp.
In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
The S&P 500 is expensive. Emerging markets are cheap. So we ask if 2026 is the year to send your money overseas. And you know, a lot of people ask questions like, is investing in China and Brazil too risky right now? And I would say the answer to that is no, not necessarily. They all have their merits. They all have their risks. And you have to certainly weigh that. Another question I see a lot of people say have is, do they have enough international exposure through S&P 500 companies? And the simple answer to that is no. Mainly because diversity and the way that these emerging markets and foreign markets are set up is from a sector perspective. It's very different than the S&P. Also, you have much different correlation to the dollar, where typically a weaker dollar is much better for international stocks than those international companies within the S&P that have just not a huge percentage of their sales coming from overseas. So those are some of the questions. So let's dig into some more answers. And you know, emerging markets had huge upside last year, really driven by macroeconomic factors and trends. So those economies overseas grew faster than us here in America for the most part. And that drove strong earnings. And so the emerging market index, MSCI index, was up about 30% last year. And a lot of those tailwinds continue into the new year. Now, are you going to have 30% year again? Probably not, but you know, can still have another solid year and could easily outperform domestic stocks. And there's the main tailwinds are things like resilience of Chinese exports. There's downstream effects of that. And a weakening dollar. That obviously is a tailwind to foreign assets. And then a lot of harder commodities like copper, gold and silver, et cetera, they're doing much, much better. And so a lot of foreign companies mine for those things. And so they are doing very, very well. And then, as I said before, the diversification aspect is drastically underappreciated. Not only because you get that inverse correlation with the dollar, but also you get exposure to a lot of other sectors that when you go by the S&P, you don't get much exposure to. You get more exposure to basic materials, for example, energy, as well as industrials. Now, what was most interesting about last year was that tariffs were supposed to really hurt emerging markets, but they were far more resilient. And each quarter had different winners. For example, in the first quarter, in Europe, emerging market Europe, they increased 17%. In the second quarter, South Korea and Taiwan were up about 28%. And then in the third quarter, China and South Africa really were the big, big winners, up around 20%. So you're getting diversity amongst these different economies as well. Now, you're still getting some tech exposure in places like South Korea, Taiwan, and China. And especially in China, they're moving up the value chain. They're not just producing toys anymore. BYD, for example, producing some of the cheapest, best cars out there. And obviously, they're going all in on AI as well, and they're doing it in many ways more efficiently than we are. Earnings per share is expected to increase 37% in emerging market tech, hardware, and semiconductors, and 15% in the internet, media, and entertainment sectors. So there's a lot of earnings growth happening over there. And then in places like Brazil, commodities, harder assets, they're improving from that standpoint. And then India, you have a demographic situation that is making them more attractive for companies to go invest in and start to produce goods that maybe they're not doing as much in China. And South Africa, they have a lot of precious metals, right? Gold and silver. So South African equities rose 60% in December. So these are some examples of why emerging markets continue to do well and are likely to continue to do well this year. And frankly, the what's happening in China is they're now exporting not just here to the United States, but they're exporting to the rest of the world, including other emerging markets. What that is doing is it's exporting disinflation. So think of our situation where for years we were importing from China. They were exporting their disinflation to us, and we were able to keep interest rates low, juice asset prices, juice the overall economy. Now that we have the tariff situation, they've pivoted. They're not relying on us anymore. And so it's allowing some of those other countries to do what we did for many years, which is lower interest rates without stoking inflation because China was exporting their disinflation to them. Now we aren't getting that as much anymore. And so that's why we have had to keep our interest rates higher and why inflation domestically has stayed relatively elevated. And so the ability for those central banks to ease is helping their economies as well. Then the lower interest rates that are likely to happen this year because of what President Trump is looking to do to try to get interest rates down, that is also likely to pressure the dollar downward, which once again is a tailwind for those emerging market stocks. So emerging markets are becoming more resilient. They're getting more economic growth, and they're getting that disinflation that we benefited from for so long when we imported from China. Hopefully that gave you a sense of what's going on with the emerging markets and whether they fit in your portfolio as we head into 2026. Now, I think you know the InvestTalk Voice Bank never closes, so you can submit your question anytime 24/7 on 888-99-CHART. So let's play a fresh listener question now.
Hi, I'm calling from San Bernardino, California. I actually work for Leggett & Platt, and I'm wondering what you guys feel about it. So we're going through some restructuring, and there was an unsolicited buy by Somni, which is much bigger. And I do have friends in the industry that are telling me that they're doing the very best they can to purchase Leggett & Platt, and that they will do whatever they can to purchase Leggett & Platt. So I'm holding Leggett & Platt. I'm wondering if I should keep holding or if I should just sell now while it's at a high. I'll be listening on the podcast. Thank you.
I would hold it. If you trust that insider that this is going to get bought out and they're going to make that happen, well, most likely they're going to have to bid this up a little bit more. And like I said, it's at $12.31 and it's cheap. And it is still profitable, 28% return on equity. Now, they do have a decent amount of debt, but, you know, the trend is now higher. It's relatively cheap, even though revenue continues to come down. Earnings are hanging in there right around $1 per share. It's a $12 stock. So certainly there's probably some scale that could be had here with some other companies coming in. Company said wanted to buy it, but yeah, Somni Group, maybe. I think that's what he said. SGI is the symbol. And I think that would make a lot of sense. And so, I would probably continue to own and hold Leggett & Platt. L-E-G is the symbol. Let's tackle another listener question that came in earlier. It says, Alex344 says, hi, I'm looking to invest in senior housing REITs and have come across LTC, and SBRA. I'm hoping to get your take on how you would assess those REITs and if one of them might be better to invest in the other. Also, thank you for answering my question about OC a couple of weeks ago. Really appreciate it. No problem. Take a look at LTC and SBRA. So LTC properties is a REIT that invests primarily in long-term care and other healthcare-related facilities in 25 states, $1.7 billion market cap, about 6.5% yield. Earnings down 40% last year, but supposed to bounce back this year to $2.80. So probably a short-term write-off or something like that. So I'm not too worried about that. Now, I am worried a little bit about the momentum. It's just kind of going sideways over the past year. So I don't love that. And then the other is SBRA, Sabra Healthcare REIT. This is performing much better. Relative strength is 61. Its earnings were up 2% last year, supposed to be up 5% this year. And they own 364 healthcare-related properties in 40 states, a $4.8 billion market cap. So certainly more scale there. And I like that. I like a bigger name in this space that can spread their cost amongst more facilities. Obviously, the trend, once again, is your friend here. I like the senior housing space because of demographics. And overall, I think that's a good place to be. Let me look at LTC and its profitability. Yeah, its return equity on LTC is only about 3.7% versus 6.3% for Sabra. And I think that reflects the scale there. So I'm absolutely picking Sabra because of that higher profitability, the trend, and just the overall size and scale that it has. So if I'm picking one or the other, it's definitely Sabra, S-B-R-A. Next, let's touch a bit on, let me pull this up. I'm going to pull up my notes here. So let's talk about earnings season. We are starting earnings season in a material way this week and really kick into high gear next week. And the big question for the markets is the rotation that's really happened since, call it around Halloween time, where the small caps have outperformed, value stocks have outperformed, tech stocks have kind of languished. Is that justified? That's what this earnings season, I think, is going to answer for the markets. Money has been flowing from tech stocks that have powered gains over the past few years to things like banks, consumer product makers, and material producers. In fact, let me look at the data here. I had it. I'll get to it in a minute, but let me go through this. So tech firms overall, they're estimated to show year-over-year earnings growth of about 20%. Non-tech earnings expected to decelerate from 9% to just 1%. So on the surface, that doesn't really make sense. But then if you look at the steepness of the yield curve and the expected reacceleration of the economy, it makes sense that money is flowing into those more value names. And guidance will be a big tell. It's not going to be about the fourth quarter. It's about what the first half of this year really looks like. The Russell 2000 has outperformed the S&P for 7 straight days. The last time that happened was in January of 2019. Tech, the biggest part of the growth side of the market, is expected to see profit expansion of about 30% for the full year this year. The value side, only 9%. But it's really driven by a handful of sectors. Industrial firms are expected to see higher profit by 13% this year. Consumer discretionary, about 12%. Healthcare, materials, and staples all expected to have about 10% earnings growth. So there's plenty of sectors here with strong earnings growth that are trading at much more reasonable multiples than tech stocks. And we know that the durability of the AI trade is certainly in question, and money managers are moving. And you see that with the rotation. This is what I wanted to get to. Tech actually bled $900 million last week. That means money leaving sector funds, tech sector funds. And about $8.3 billion went into other industries, mainly materials, healthcare, and industrials. So money is moving in a material way, pun intended right there. So institutions are still very overweight tech, trimming those positions, especially in the new year. Now that you don't have to wait, it's a new year. You don't have to pay the taxes on it till next year. And a lot of people held off on taking those gains to close the year. But now the hunt for areas to rotate is on. And there's still a lot of that to be had because of how overweight the positioning in tech really is. And that's why you continue to see, once again, value outperform, small caps outperform, mid caps outperform. That's really the theme of the first dozen or so trading days of 2026. So I wanted to highlight that as we are getting into this new year this new earnings season and what to look out for and see if that is durable. Once we get past it, once we get through this guidance from these names and whether or not this trend really sticks. And I think it probably will. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch InvestTalk on our YouTube channel.
Hi, InvestTalk. Hope you're enjoying the start to the new year. If you could start a 10% position in your portfolio today in one of these three names, which would you choose? The gold ETF, GLD, the copper miners ETF, COPX, or VOE, the mid-cap value by Vanguard. Thanks so much for taking my question, and I'll be listening on the podcast.
This is a tough one. You picked three good ones. I would probably say a little bit of all of them, and it would probably also depend on what else you hold. That's really the answer. All are good choices. I think all would be fine additions to almost every portfolio, but how much gold exposure do you have? How much copper exposure do you have? What does your mid-cap exposure look like? Mid-caps, especially the value side of the market right now, you're getting really strong exposure to, let me pull this up here. You're getting really strong exposure to particular sectors like industrials at 13%, tech is only 10%, which is good, financial services on 16%. You're getting really broad diversification, frankly, much, much better in that than you will with the S&P, for example. So if your goal is just broad diversification, the mid-cap value is the best way to go. Then you augment it maybe with a little bit of COPX, a little bit with the GLD, et cetera. I have no issue with that. So the answer is all of them, but it depends on what else you hold. Thanks for the call. Now, lastly, speaking of copper, let's talk a little bit about the mega deals that are happening within the material space. And this is really around the demand for copper. And this is why I say that one of the best secular demand stories is copper. And Rio Tinto and Glencore said last Thursday that they are talking about a merger that would create a market value of more than $200 billion. And that's because U.S. copper prices hit a record on Monday. And copper is used in things like piping, circuit boards, and wiring all around powering the AI revolution. And then you have things like electric vehicles, renewable energy, solar, defense spending on copper heavy things like ammunition and other weaponry, et cetera. And the demand is set to outstrip supply by 25% by 2040, according to S&P Global, unless miners start to increase their production. Now, in November, the U.S. Geological Survey added copper to its list of critical minerals deemed vital to national security and the overall economy. So that could open the doors for federal aid to encourage more production. And last year, copper was up 41% and obviously making further gains so far this year. Last year, you had Anglo-American agreeing to merge with Teck Resources, really around their copper production. And it's not just about gaining access to it, but it's creating efficiencies and financial heft so they can raise capital to improve their output of the mines that they're already producing from, as well as explore at new ones. And S&P Global projects demand for copper to swell to 42 million metric tons by 2040. That's a 50% increase from the current levels. That's in just 14 years. And over the next decade, data centers will need more than 4.3 million metric tons of the metal alone, over 10% of global demand. And then you have things like decarbonization and defense supporting prices. Demand for EVs alone, around 2.3 million tons by 2030. And 1.3 million tons in 2025. So 1.3 to 2.3 in just 5 years. So huge tailwinds here. And this is a story, once again, as I said at the top of the show, it's not just about demand, and that's certainly booming, but it's also about supply. It's very difficult for these miners to bring on new supply. And that's why it's a great investment. That's why it's one of the best performing asset classes right now and will likely be in the future, because it's not easy. It's not simple to just bring on new supply like oil, for example. So still love the space, and I wanted to update that data for you. Now, I'm Justin Klein. If today's show made you think about your own financial picture in any way, your investments, taxes, retirement, whether it's all really working together for you, let's talk about it. What kind of exposure do you have to mid-cap value, 2 copper, 2 gold, 2 silver, 2 industrials, 2 financials. Are you overweight tech? What about the picks and shovels of the AI trade? These are all things we talk about, as well as building out that broader financial plan and projecting out decades into the future. This is all that we do for clients, and we can discuss it on a portfolio review by heading over to investtalk.com to click on that portfolio review button. Please tell your friends and family about our free podcast download, which you can find anytime at iTunes or Spotify, and head over to YouTube and watch our videos there. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.